Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. You can download this program from on your mobile device from prn.fm. You can go to TuneIn app, Stitcher app, iTunes, or you can listen over the telephone, which a lot of people have, more than 5 million minutes. And that number is easy to also, you should always keep this, because if there's ever a problem, you're out someplace, you can call 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. Listen in. This is our Talk Back program once a week. It's all about the issues that are important to you. I'm going to start by always giving the latest on health and healing. Then we segue into your calls. The number to call, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. We look forward to taking your calls. Now the latest on health and nutrition. It is my opinion that the vast majority of type 1, or what are called juvenile diabetes cases, are due to an overuse of vaccinations, which substantially compromises their immune system, including their pancreas, but also the incredible amount of antipsychotic medication. Recently, I was filming in North Florida, and I was near Orlando. I was filming a school that tries to help children who have been on psychiatric meds or diagnosed with psychiatric labels to correct themselves and live a normal life. And they use some really good holistic therapies, both talk therapies and nutritional therapies. They were telling me how many more children are on psych meds today than just 5 years ago. It's increasing exponentially. There's a cost to pay. This is from Vanderbilt University School of Medicine, published in the Journal of the American Medical Association publication Psychiatry. Here's what it says. Diabetes linked to antipsychotic use in adolescents. I'll quote this directly from Vanderbilt University School of Medicine. It says, the children between the ages of 6 and 24 years of age were part of a Tennessee Medicaid program between 1996 and 2007, 11 years. They analyzed 28,000 children and younger people who recently were prescribed antipsychotic drugs. There was a separate group that acted as a control that didn't receive the drugs. What they found was that most of the kids were getting drugs for diagnosis of schizophrenia and or other behavioral problems. That's what they're generally used for. Now, of course, there is no such thing as schizophrenia. You have no tests that can determine it. There is no blood-brain profile. There is no chemical imbalance that can prove schizophrenia. If you go back and look at the history of schizophrenia and the work done at Columbia University by a researcher, and you track that researcher's background back to Hitler's Germany and how this person worked with a Dr. Rubin there, who determined that anyone who was mentally incompetent should be euthanized, and they did, that's where all this nonsense comes from. Also, a lot of people are using these antipsychotic medications because of dementia. Why? Because it helps alleviate some of the hallucinations, agitation, and aggression. Of course, it can also cause those. Here's what they found. According to Vanderbilt University Medical School researchers, these antipsychotic drugs that our young people are on will give them a 300% more likely outcome in developing diabetes. That's tremendous. The mean average of these were 16 years of age. 37% were male. Quote, in this cohort of children and youth who had recently initiated use of an antipsychotic or a controlled psychotropic drug, antipsychotic users had a risk of newly diagnosed diabetes 3 times greater than that for propensity score match controls. Well, They said, quote, the excess risk occurred within the first year of antipsychotic use. So we have an epidemic of diabetes in children in the United States, including adult type 2 diabetes. And we also have the largest number of young people diagnosed with mental illness and put on drugs like Ritalin, Prozac, and Paxil of any country in the world, including countries that have 500% larger populations. Now, why is it that our generation, the baby boomers, or our parents' generation, why didn't they have anyone diagnosed with these conditions or on these drugs? Because it didn't exist. Today, all you have to be is just slightly curious, distracted, not paying attention, and you get yourself a diagnosis. For the women in this audience, one way to reduce death from all causes, according to the Journal of Clinical Endocrinology and Metabolism, research done at McGill University in Canada, is have a calcium-rich diet. That can reduce your risk of death. Here's what it says. Quote, the results suggest that women who take calcium supplement doses of up to 1,000 milligrams per day may live longer compared to women who do not take the supplements. That's from Dr. Goldsman, the lead author on the study. Quote, our study found daily use of calcium supplements was associated with a lower risk of death among women. The benefit was seen for women who took doses of up to 1,000 milligrams per day, regardless of whether they supplemented with vitamin D. So that's good. Take your calcium. By the way, broccoli, kale, green juices. If you eat fish, the best way of getting your calcium would be sardines. And poor oral hygiene, which most people have, is tied to a cancer-linked virus. This is the latest from Health Day. This was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Prevention Research, done at University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. Quote, avoiding human papillomavirus is yet another reason to take care of your teeth, gums, experts say. People whose teeth and gums are in poor condition may be more susceptible to oral virus that can cause certain mouth and throat cancers. Researchers found that of more than 3,400 U.S. adults, those who rated their oral health as poor to fair were more likely to have an oral infection of human papillomavirus, which in certain cases can eventually lead to cancer. Now, why is it we would be having bad teeth? Well, how about smoking and drinking? Alcohol changes the entire pH in the mouth, and that's not good. You create a highly acidic system. You throw your enzymes out, you destroy enzymes, and alcohol in any amount will adversely affect the digestive enzymes in the intestine, especially your proteolytic enzymes. You also will have hyperacidity, which means you burn, literally burn the esophagus, and you burn the trachea, and you burn the stomach. That means the stomach has to create more mucosa in order to keep it from having an ulcer. And then you go into the intestine and you burn the alkalinity of the duodenum. So that's a problem. But then you can also cause bleeding ulcers. You destroy vitamin C with alcohol, folic acid, B12, and B6, all of which are necessary in order to keep your homocysteine levels down. And that's one of the reasons that people who drink alcohol, not to get drunk, not to binge, just social drinking, they have a very high level of homocysteine. And what I'm finding is an epidemic of arrhythmias out there, and people don't know why they have them. Well, look at your alcohol causing elevated homocysteine, and most people would never know they have homocysteine elevated. You start getting up at 15 or higher, you're really damaging your heart, and that's a principal cause of death from heart attack. So, also, sugar. Sugar causes terrible hygiene in the mouth, and people are not brushing properly, flossing, water irrigating between the teeth and the gums, and cleaning the tongue. After you brush your teeth, after you mouthwash, open your mouth and look. Do you have a white tongue? If you do, that can be many things. Candida, thrush, yeast overgrowth. That means a weakened immune system. It also means that you could have bacterial overgrowth. Now, if you have infection in your cavities around your nose, under your eyes, you can have systemic infections just because your immune system is chronically, let's say, on the downside. You're not getting a good night's sleep. You're running some nutrient deficiencies. You're stressed. That can cause bacteria to build up in the sinus cavities and then drip down to the back of the throat. Then when you breathe, the bacteria being breathed out is frequently what causes bad breath. And a lot of people don't realize that this tongue is not like the lips, even though it's all considered mucous membrane, because it's like a sponge, and that's where our taste sensation comes from. You breathe and you taste, because the breath coming across those millions and millions of little villi, that's what causes the pheromones and the taste in a food and the oils in a food to register as something pleasant or not. But you've got to take a tongue cleaner and gently, not hard, from the back of the throat forward, clean off your tongue. In other cultures, including in India, it's very common to do that. Not so in the United States. So most people walk around with infections in their gums, loose teeth, periodontal conditions, gingivitis, and bad breath. All of that can be reversed. There is what is called the Norwich Super Broccoli. And according to the latest study, it rejuvenates our metabolism. Quote, eating super broccoli 3 times a week can help retune the metabolism, and this could protect against age-related diseases like obesity, type 2 diabetes, and cancer. The super broccoli, known as Benefort, was developed by some scientists at their Institute for Food Research, and they just bred the broccoli until they got a strain that was very high in the nutrient called glucoraphanin, and it's converted in the gut to the bioactive compound called sulforaphane, which circulates in our bloodstream. And it's the sulforaphane that can help stop early cancers from activating. It's very, very powerful. This was published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition. So what are my thoughts on this? Well, two. One, I believe as long as you're eating a good amount of the cruciferous vegetables each week, you're getting your sulforaphane. And if you're juicing any of that, you're getting a lot of it. If you're having your compounded powders, you're getting even more than what you could ever eat. And therefore, you don't have to go buy something that may be expensive. And I haven't seen whether or not they use genetic engineering to create this. So I'll stick with broccoli sprouts and broccoli, and have it in myriad different ways during the week, as well as cabbage and kale, and also I really like the mustard family, and especially the mustard seed. Mustard sprouts are terrific, and daikon, radish, and horseradish, wasabi, Brussels sprouts, and asparagus. There's lots of good dishes you can use those in. A finding at the University of Pennsylvania Hospital lets us know why it's important not to have vitamin D deficiency. And they were finding a whole series of diseases that happen when a person is deficient, including ulcerative colitis and irritable bowel syndrome. So my suggestion is that we start paying attention to getting our vitamin D. You don't need a lot. 1,000 to 3,000 or 4,000 a day, and that would be fine. And that will help you. Now, there's another spice that can really impact your mood, and there's new research on this, and that's very positive. And it's one I talk about all the time. There's just more and more research on it, thousands of studies. It's called curcumin, cure, C-U-R, cumin, C-U-M-I-N. And now it impacts your mood. Turmeric, which is the superstar in the health food and supplement world, is the carrier of the curcumin. It's been used in Ayurvedic medicine for thousands of years. And most people use it in their cooking. It's what gives that yellow color to food. And it's responsible for a lot of healing. What's the latest on it? The latest shows that curcumin is good, as good as Prozac. That's right. In one new study of adults, they were either given three groups of, for 6 weeks, of 1,000 milligrams of curcumin, or Prozac, 20 milligrams daily, or a combination of both. And there's a test called the Hamilton Rating Scale for Depression that was used to test results. And what they found was with the best results were with curcumin. Quote, curcumin alleviates brain inflammation and stimulates new brain cells. So that's good. One more reason to take curcumin. I mentioned the other day all the good things that sea buckthorn does. Well, now we can add bilberries to sea buckthorn. The two together improve metabolic conditions. That would help diabetic and pre-diabetic conditions. It would help you if you're overweight. And it helps the heart of women. Quote, daily consumption of sea buckthorn berries, its extracts, or bilberries, can boost the overall metabolic profiles of overweight women. This was a study done in Finland at the University of Turku. And what they found was that that it made a big difference in helping the metabolism. And that's what you want. You want to improve your metabolism if you're overweight or diabetic or pre-diabetic. It could help save your life. From Deakin University in Australia, junk food in pregnancy is linked to childhood mental disorders. I thought this was interesting. It says, researchers from Deakin University in Australia, alongside university researchers in Norway, analyzed more than 23,000 mothers who were part of the Norwegian Mother and Child Cohort Study. The study, published in the peer-reviewed journal of the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, gathered information on all of the women and their offspring. And here's what they found. Junk food can lead to, in the children, depression, anxiety, conduct disorder, ADHD. So, quote, the results of this study reveal that mothers who eat more unhealthy foods during pregnancy, such as sweet drinks, refined cereals, and salty foods, have children with increased behavioral problems, such as aggression and tantrums. Additionally, the findings show that children who eat more unhealthy foods in their first years of life or who lack nutrient-rich foods, such as vegetables, also show increased aggression and behavioral problems, as well as symptoms of depression and anxiety. So, for anyone who's living today with some sense of consciousness, we all know that diet matters, and it impacts us all in different ways. And finally, how do we prevent enzyme deficiency? I remember one of the very first meetings I had when I started in the world of health and nutrition, and I had the book out there, and I was on tour. I met two people in Arizona, in Phoenix. One was Dr. Pavla Arola, the other was Dr. Walker. And after my lecture there, they invited me out to dinner, wanted to talk with this young guy, because there was no one young in the whole field of health, which, when you think about it, is rather unusual. I mean, imagine every single sport. You not only have your mature athletes, you have those who are reaching their peak, and you have those who are younger. And then you have the farm league that are out there getting the next whole generation. But this is also true in many other aspects of life. Not so in nutrition. For some reason, everybody was old. Adele Davis, Carlton Fredericks, Gaylord Houser, Linda Clark, Catherine Elwood, Bob Hoffman, Paul Bragg. They were all old. And none of them were healthy. That was what just shocked me the first time I went to a health convention. It was at the Coliseum. And the man who invited me just died 2 weeks ago, Clinton Miller. He was, by the way, just a remarkable diplomat and positive thinking on all levels. And he had run the National Health Federation for decades. And I believe he lived out in Utah and was a Mormon. And he was very even balanced in his approach to things. And he said, remember, he gave me a call for the radio station. And he said, I just heard you on the radio and I have your book. And boy, do we need someone young. So I met with him, and he was telling me that he thought that the reason there was no one young in the entire field of health is because the people who had been there for so long were insecure and jealous and didn't want anyone taking their turf, because there's also a lot of financial dealings going on where people would endorse a particular vitamin or program based upon their financial connection to it. But he said, would I come and, you know, be one of the lecturers? I said, okay. And what I noticed when I went into the speaker's area, first the whole place was filled with cigarette smoke, and I thought, this is odd. And then they were all drinking alcohol, and they had these little sausages on sticks that you could eat. It was just something I had never experienced before. Never thought. I thought all that everyone in the health field would be healthy. I had never met any of these people. And so I'm looking around at these people. And then I listened. I stood backstage and I watched each one. And they all were very charismatic. Carlton Fredericks had a great sense of humor and very good delivery. But he was out there talking and smoking at the same time. And I'm thinking, man, you come to hear someone talk about health who's the number one health. He and Adele Davis were about equal in their popularity. Fredericks, because he had been on WR radio for about 20 years, 25 years. And Adele Davis, because she had millions of books sold. And I read one of her books, and there wouldn't be a thing in that book I would ever recommend anyone doing. But anyhow, that's beside the point. And I could boil down everything they said into about a minute and a half that whole day. And all the people in the room were all whiteheads. They were all grays. There wasn't a single young person there. And when I went out to talk, they all got up and left. They had no interest in hearing me. For whatever reason, I'm sure that most of them didn't know who I was. They were there for their favorite person. And whoever wanted, Betty Lee Morales, Kurt Donsback, whoever it was, I certainly wasn't in their consciousness. And I started to realize that I didn't want to be a part of any of that. And so I told Clinton Miller afterwards. I said, Clinton, I said, I very much appreciate you inviting me here, but I felt like I was in the wrong place. He said, what do you mean? I said, well, these people have held forth for decades. They have their loyal followings, and they're all successful. But I have a different understanding of health. I'm looking at social issues. I'm looking at the environmental issues and health and cooking and exercise. And none of these people were at all interested in this. It was high-protein diets, high-protein meat diets, but from grass-fed cattle and high dairy and take a vitamin. And that's not what I'm about. No one talked about anything body-mind. No one talked about spirituality. No one talked about meditation, yoga, nothing. And he said, well, that's why they need you. I said, no, they don't need me. They're only going to resent who I am and what message I give. I'll be out there. I'll be doing what I can, but I'm going to find the audience I want. They have their audience. I'm not criticizing it. They have a good match. But I believe that there are millions of Americans who aren't interested in health because of how unhealthy that most people in the health field are and by the limited message. And we didn't speak again for about 3 years. I went ahead and did my work. And then I get a call and he said, Gary, can you come out to New Jersey? Why should I come to New Jersey? Well, because we have this big event out here in and we're at this Paramount Theater down here on the Jersey Shore, and we just don't have anyone who's coming, and we got all these top people coming, but we don't have paying people, and you got a popular show, surely you can come down here. So I thought about it, and I thought, well, I've never been to there in New Jersey, the town. It's where Bruce Springsteen was. Sure, I'll do it. So I went out there. Now, there's some photographs up on my website of Carlton, Freddie, and I co-hosting it together. So we both hosted. Well, they had about 1,200 people show, all of them from my audience, no one from his audience. And boy, was that a different-looking crowd. Young people, vital issues. And afterwards, he came over to me, and he said, I appreciate what you did. You pulled it out. It was Asbury Park. He said, you pulled it out for us. And I said, well, I'm willing to do this once, but we're in two different worlds. And over the last 3 years, I've seen that there's a need for my kind of message and for the people who are here wanting to hear Carlton Fredericks. That's a different group. That was the last time in my entire career that I ever appeared before health, anything in the health field, because I just never found anything healthy in the health field or any of the people to be healthy. I found a lot of hucksters and self-promoters and magic, you know, elixirs, but I didn't find health, I didn't find humility, and I didn't find spiritual values, the things I believe really anchor what a health movement should be. It's just some random thoughts. Back in a moment with your calls. Time for you to call in now. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. The program is called Talk Back. It's the one time each week where I don't have a guest. So you have all the time now to call in and share your thoughts, your questions, your comments. 888-874-4888. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? I'm Gary Knoll. I detoured off my original thought, and I wanted just to finish that up before we take your calls. We have a lot of calls. We'll be happy to address them. But here was Dr. Pablo Arola and Dr. Walker, and they were two of the finest people that I had ever met in the health field. They were genuine people, and they believed in enzyme therapies. They believed in vitalism. And so they showed all these different herbs, because Walker was an herbalist, and he had all these herbs hanging from the ceiling and all these different jars. And Arola was very much into food combining and also in taking in things that were fermented. They were way ahead of their time in that respect. And I remember both of them saying, we need to emphasize more of eating a raw plant-based diet. But Americans are just not into eating raw. They're conditioned to eat things that are cooked and heavily cooked. He was right. Now, there is a movement today for living foods and raw foods, and it's growing. I see it in the health food store. I see, starting with just a few items, now there are hundreds and hundreds of different items that are raw, living, and nutrient-dense. Well, there's a reason to have enzymes. Enzymes are the catalysts of life. Enzymes are in your body what the spark plugs are in an engine of a car. And they're what allow all the different biochemical processes to occur. They're in there facilitating biochemical processes. Now, there are enzymes that we eat and get them in our food, and the more living the food is, the more we get. And when we juice, we really flood the body with enzymes. And then those enzymes go about helping our hormones and minerals and vitamins and other functions to carry out all their different tasks. They're different enzymes performing different functions. Quite simply, when you're deficient in enzymes, you're deficient in clean food, you can't live. They help you digest your food, break it into smaller parts. They help you build bone, muscle, organs, and glands. They help your liver to detoxify. They coagulate your blood. They attach iron to red blood cells. They help eliminate carbon dioxide from your lungs. They change protein into sugar or fat. They change fat into carbohydrate. You can have all the materials necessary, but you've got to have enzymes in order for your body to utilize the materials in the right way. The more you cook foods, the less enzymes you have, which is one of the reasons that I believe that our animals should have a lot of raw food, raw meat or raw fish. That would allow them to live a much longer life. They're eating too much out of cans or kibble, and that doesn't work. So food enzymes help facilitate our digestion. So eat your food slowly and eat a lot of combinations that give you the max amount of nuts, fruits, vegetables, and herbs. And therefore you get your enzymes. Some of the richest sources of enzymes are olives, sprouts, grapes, figs, bananas, avocado, papaya, pineapple, mango, and your germinated raw grains and nuts. Even raw dairy, especially cultured and fermented foods, are really high in enzymes. Keep the food below 120 degrees in drying it or cooking it if you want to maximize your enzymes. And by the way, you can cook at a low temperature and just do fine. This idea that we have to cook at a high temperature is just nonsense. In cultures that consume a lot of raw food, they live long lives. I'm Gary Nall. Let's say hello to John from California. Hi, John.
Chinez. Hey, a friend of mine called me from New Mexico, and I'm having problems with fleas on my dog. And he said that he saw on TV where they use orange peel, he said orange juice last night, but I started thinking about it. Wouldn't the peel, does that mean like the peel of the orange stop the fleas from biting the dog? Like rub it on the dog's fur?
It would not be orange juice, but orange peel contains chemicals that would be caustic to anything on the skin of the animal. And if you were to give your dog a bath and put some orange peel in it or orange peel oil in it, and not a lot, doesn't take a lot, and then massage it in and leave it in for a couple hours and rinse it out.
How about the zest of the orange? I was thinking the lemon would even be better, wouldn't it, the zest of the lemon?
Lemon and lime and orange all work, except that you don't want to do anything that could be too caustic to the skin.
So you're saying the direct, like if I zest off, scrape off the skin, kind of like a little fine granule, and then rub it into the dog's fur, that would be too harsh?
That would be a little too harsh. That's why you want to get it, take a couple drops and put it into a good quality dog shampoo, and that way it's enough to be in hindrance to the flea, but not enough to burn the skin of the dog.
Well, I'm glad I called you, because I was going to zest a lemon and an orange and rub it into his fur and brush it in.
And that might not do anything wrong at all. I'm just wanting to be a little cautious, because I know what happens when people choose to hear something out of context.
Right.
Okay?
Thank you.
All the best to you, John.
Bye.
Let's say hello to Arthur from Connecticut. Hi, Arthur.
Hi, Gary. I've been listening to you a long time. Thank you for everything you do. My question is, I was wondering if there's ever a circumstance or an event when you would recommend someone get a vaccination or that you personally would get a vaccination?
No. No, under no conditions would I ever get a vaccine of any type, because I've just finished 4 years of extensive scholarship. I've read every article I could find in the literature, the scientific literature, on the safety and efficacy of vaccines, and I cannot find a single source that shows me that all the vaccines are safe and effective. To the contrary, there are thousands of articles showing you the damage that can be done to the active ingredients and to the additive ingredients and to the adjuvant ingredients, including aluminum, mercury, polysorbate 80, formaldehyde, and then DNA from mice, from pigs, from chickens, from liver cells, from monkeys, from cancer cells, from aborted fetuses. And there's no science behind this. And if people ever looked for the truth, they would find no truth in the science of immunology. Not when it comes to vaccines, and we've associated immunology with vaccination. So if you're vaccinated, you're immunized. And that's not true, because just last week on this program, I reported in multiple cases where 100% in some cases, the people within a given area had been immunized, large outbreaks of the very thing that they were immunized for, either measles or chickenpox. And now we even see it in India with polio. They're immunized for polio, and then they come down with polio in a worse case of it. So there we're then faced with this duality. Do we believe what the authorities say, including those that we tend to feel humbled by their knowledge and expertise, the medical doctors, or do we do the correct thing, and that is look for the truth, and if the truth aligns with them, fine. If it doesn't, challenge them. But we've been conditioned from very early in life to always believe in authorities and to stay in line. And even now, we are, you know, putting police that have been militarized into our schools. Children have to have ID badges. They're using retinal scans. They can't do anything that represents being a child anymore, because that's now considered a terrorist threat or instability within the school system. So we've made our schools into little prisons. Little wonder that we have no one protesting anything in the United States today on any level. You don't have the unions, forget that. You don't have the you don't have the corporate Democrats or Republicans, forget them. And you have no organization within the independents, they, even though they represent over 41% of voters. So what we have is we have people who have seen what happens when people are standing up for their rights. They're then put on a terrorist list somewhere. This is the latest. I was going to share this tomorrow. I'll share it now. This is from a major newspaper, and this is also from Ms. Toshi Ikido, Hino City Assembly legislator and Secretary General and Secretariat of the Nationwide Liaison Associated for Cervical Cancer Vaccine Victims and Parents. This is from a newspaper. Quote, "The citizens of Japan suffering from convulsions, seizures, severe headaches, partial paralysis, and a host of other adverse events after submitting to the human papillomavirus vaccinations have petitioned their government health officials to permanently suspend the use of cervical cancer vaccines. According to the testimony presented to the National Health Ministry by Dr. Sotaro Saito, who has examined many of the injured girls, quote, the convulsions, inability to walk, involuntary movements of hands and toes were caused by encephalomyelitis, or inflammation of the brain and spinal cord. Cervical cancer vaccines, which are chemically bound to special types of adjuvants, often trigger encephalomyelitis, and since the vaccines cause autoantibodies against the brain's neuron fibers to be produced in many cases, they have triggered demyelinating disorders. They have also induced many cases of cerebral vasculitis." By the way, demyelinization would be multiple sclerosis. So, that's in Japan. Had you heard about that? No. No one in America heard about this, because when bad news comes to major corporations, they can always count upon the supplicants in the American media not to highlight their misdeeds, their fraudulent science. So there'd be no circumstance in the world that I would ever submit to the barbarity, the insanity, the lack of any basis in real science of what they call an immunization. If they believe that they can show me proof that a vaccine will help by immunizing with safety any given individual, let them bring that person forward and let them then give a written pledge that if anything happens to that person, either adverse events or they catch the condition they've been vaccinated for, that person could sue them for $100 million. Let's see how many brave souls who are so absolutely rigorous in their defense of vaccines will come forward. It's all fraud. In our final segment today on TalkBack, and thank you for your calls, always appreciated, let me give even some more health information, because that's something everyone benefits from. And the healthier we get, well, the better our lives become. So one of the things we can do is we can start to look at other foods we wouldn't normally eat for our sources of protein. One of those sources is quinoa, Q-U-I-N-O-A, quinoa. It's a nutritional powerhouse. It was called the gold of the Incas or the super grain of the future. It has a lot of health benefits. It is a pseudo-cereal, and it's in the grass family, like oats and rye and wheat, but it's technically a member of the food family along with beets and spinach and Swiss chard. It's rich in its antioxidant quality, phytonutrients, quercetin, has all of those. That means it's anti-inflammatory. That means it can turn off pain in the joints and the muscles and helps repair any kind of tissue, especially if you're fighting a disease. A lot of people are protein fetished. They believe they're not getting enough protein. In point of fact, almost every person I counsel who has a disease has way too much protein. Now remember, you don't need a lot of protein. You need it 3 times a day, ideally. In the morning, in the early afternoon, in the early evening. And it should be in an easily digestible form. When you're eating meat, not a good idea. First, because meat is pro-inflammatory and pro-cancer. Secondly, it's filled with, more often than not, antibiotics, growth-stimulating hormones, pesticides, and there's just no real quality vibrational life energy in it. Thirdly, yeah, it has some iron, but that's not a good form of iron. And it also has some of the B vitamins and amino acids. Okay, but I'd rather get my amino acids and my fiber, which it does not have, and my B complex from grains. Quinoa is a grain that has a good amount of protein. In fact, it has more lysine and isoleucine than many other forms of protein. It's a complete protein. It contains all 9 amino acids, 8 that are essential. And so that way you can have the amino acids you need for building strong muscles and your immune system. It's good in calcium. In fact, it's right up there in the amount of calcium we need for strong bones. It's high in fiber. We know that the more fiber we have in a healthy diet from whole grains and whole foods, the healthier our digestive system is. And it also has a low glycemic index, which means that diabetics and people with blood sugar imbalances can consume it. It's very rich in vitamin B2, which stimulates your metabolism, and that's a good thing. It also promotes more energy in your brain and your muscle cells, and it's also known to contribute to migraine relief. And it is one of the better grains for maintaining cardiovascular health, and it can help prevent diabetes. So it's easy to prepare the gluten-free quinoa. You can get it in any health food store. So that's one good thing that we should add to our diet. Also, there are 10 ways to protect yourself from harmful cell phone radiation. And yes, we do have problems with cell phone radiation out there. You've probably know that we have nearly 2 billion cell phone users in the world, over 210 million in the United States alone. Now, I'm concerned because I have at least 22 studies showing that the electromagnetic pulses emanating from cell towers to cell phones and satellites to cell phones are dangerous. They overheat the brain, they can adversely affect chromosomes, they can increase the risk of brain and skull and skin and jaw and tongue cancers. So what do you do? Well, J.D. Hayes of Natural News has 10 suggestions. So these are good suggestions. We can all use these. Number one, just for goodness sake, limit the time you're on the phone. Now, most people sleep with a phone near their head. Never do that. And if you could limit yourself to short 2-minute calls, that can make a difference. In fact, 2-minute call can alter the natural electrical activity of the brain up to 1 hour. So just think how many times people have that cell phone up to their head. Text when you can. Why? Because when you text, you're not collecting in your body, in your brain, the electromagnetic pulses. Also, consider replacing your current phone with a low radiation phone. So whenever you make it or receive a call, your phone signal travels via electromagnetic waves. And those are dangerous. So consult the Environmental Working Group's recommendations. And they have a website, and that they'll show you the safest ones. I always use a speaker. That's simple. You just put it on speaker, and you can hold it feet away from your body, therefore producing no problems at all. And or you can use a headset. Now, you've seen those people use that little thing in their ear. Well, that's really increasing the amount of electromagnetic pulses into the brain. Don't put your phone by your body or on your waist during use. Again, why? It's a device that emits and transmits electromagnetic waves that are absorbed by the soft tissue in your body. One single study showed that men who wear their cell phones near their waist could end up with problems with their prostate. Not good. Also, avoid use in metal boxes. Now, that may sound funny, but using your phone in some, say, an elevator or your car cuts signal strength and forces the phone to use more power to connect. And also about the power thing, if your cell signal is down to a few bars, consider waiting to use your phone. Again, it's a power thing. Less signal means more power is required for use. And just a word about the electromagnetic pulses. Protect yourself from the electromagnetic fields. You can do that by purchasing a scientifically validated protection device. I use one of those little gold mesh screens, and it's been tested at about 98% elimination of the electromagnetic pulse going at least through the earpiece. Also, always support your body with the nutrients that are necessary, especially antioxidants like vitamin C and quercetin and vitamin E and glutathione and zinc and coenzyme Q10. That can protect your body when there is an exposure of electromagnetic pulses. And also, we are told that the mitochondrial diseases are on the rise. Now, we know that our mitochondria are the energy factories of our body. We have the most mitochondria in the brain and in the heart because we use the heart and the brain so much. And when people get older, these mitochondria are damaged, and therefore we slow down. Our thinking slows down. Our energy level slows down. It doesn't need to be that way. We can reverse this because we can create some new mitochondria. Now, the question is this, and this is from the United Mitochondrial Disease Foundation. Are we losing our mitochondria because of the genetically modified organisms? And that's important. According to their foundation and Natural News, they estimate that every half hour a child is born who will develop some type of mitochondrial disease by the time they reach 10 years of age. Now, based upon the symptom profiles typically associated with various mitochondrial diseases, as well as their rapid increase in prevalence throughout the past several decades, it appears as though genetically modified organisms may be a likely cause or trigger of this chronic disorder that today affects one in every 3,000 individuals. Just keep in mind, the human body naturally contains a whole network of cellular energy producers, known as the mitochondria. That converts energy and other nutrients into adenosine triphosphate, ATP, and that's a coenzyme substance that many biologists often refer to as the energy currency of life. So without properly functioning mitochondria, in other words, the body is unable to produce the energy it needs to develop adequate muscle mass, to build strong bones, to form a healthy brain, and facilitate proper digestion, among other important functions. So eat organic, and also make sure you're getting coenzyme Q10, PPQ, NADH, and vitamin E. All of those will help make sure that your mitochondria are healthy, undamaged, and giving you the energy that you require throughout your entire life. A new study, good news, from the Journal of Gastrointestinal Cancer from the Mayo Clinic, shows that vitamin intake from fruit and vegetables and supplements are associated with a lower risk of pancreatic cancer. Now, we know that pancreatic cancer is one of the worst cancers. This study involved over 384 men and women with pancreatic cancer and about 1,000 that were not. And what they found was, based upon their diet, that those individuals that had the highest intake of magnesium, potassium, selenium, the carotenoids, and lutein, and other antioxidants had less cancer. So once again, how do we get the benefit from that? Well, I believe one of the best things we could do is start each day with a nice glass of vegetable juice. And for those of you who may be a little finicky and not like the taste of it, you can always cut the vegetables like celery and cucumber, parsley and kale, and watercress. You can cut it with some apple, and that will sweeten it up very nicely, and or put in a grapefruit, and that works excellent as well. So let's get more of our vegetables in us in the way of juice, because then you're getting more enzymes, you're flooding the body with healing nutrients, you're chelating heavy metals. Chelation comes from the Greek chele, which means claw-like. So let's say you have some lead, mercury, aluminum, and the chelation of the chlorophyll grabs that and takes it out through the body. All that is good. And finally, really good is garlic. A new study, as reported in the is called the Provincial Center for Disease Control and Prevention, says, quote, garlic reduces lung cancer risk by 44%. That's terrific. Quote, consuming raw garlic could serve as a protective factor against lung cancer, even for smokers. And this is a major study out of China. So I'm saying, hey, if you could lower your risk of lung cancer by 44%, then do it. And the source of the article was raw garlic consumption as a protective factor for lung cancer, a population-based case study. And that's good. And so we need garlic in our diet. It's a high sulfur food. It can lower blood pressure, lower viral activity, kill viruses and bacteria in your stomach, in your throat. It is just good at all things. So let's have some of that in our body every day. You can juice it. I'm Gary Knoll, and I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen. Go to the archives, download the programs. And I want to thank the 137,000 of you who listened to last week's Saturday show. That just gives you an idea of the audience we have out there. Over the internet, of all things, that does not include all the land-based stations. Have a nice day, everyone.